Welcome everyone and thanks for being here. My name is Gemma and today I'd like to present to you Ercilia, the hub of artificial intelligence and machine learning tools for neglected and infectious disease research that we are building as part of the Ercilia Open Source Initiative, a non-profit organization based in the UK. So, let's jump to it. First, let me introduce the team. Myself, I'm Gemma, I'm co-founder and CEO of the Ercilia Open Source Initiative and my background is in molecular and cell biology. Michael Duran-Frigola is co-founder and chief scientific officer and his background is in computational chemistry. And Eduardo, who is the co-founder and trustee of the initiative and his background is as well in molecular biology. Then let's start by some facts. Here you can see the world countries as classified by the World Bank in high, upper middle, low middle and low income countries. And then if we plot in this cartogram instead of the land size, the total population, we see how most of the population is concentrated in the Asia region and also the Africa region. If we then go on to plotting the loss of years of healthy life, this means the years lost due to premature death as well as the years lived with disability, we see how those accumulations are more prominent in the Asia region as well as in the Africa region. And then the differences become much more striking if we look at the years of healthy life lost due to communicable diseases, which are happening mostly and predominantly in low and lower middle income countries from the Africa region, whereas high and upper middle income countries are barely having loss of healthy years of life because of infectious diseases, as you can see Europe or North America. And contrarily, if we look at non-communicable diseases, we see how these affect predominantly high and upper middle income countries in Europe, Asia, and also the America regions. And the most striking and important difference that we want to present today is the number of scientific publications as a measure of the scientific output of the countries. We see how most of the scientific research actually is coming from high-income countries, North America and Europe, as well as some upper-middle-income countries in the Asia region. But Africa is generally really underrepresented in this context, meaning that very low numbers of the scientific production worldwide come from this region. Actually, low and lower middle income countries represent less than 10% of the total scientific output produced in the world. This means that they have less capability to produce solutions adapted to their needs, and therefore that the diseases that affect mostly these countries, such as communicable diseases, are less researched and less solutions and new medicines are produced for them, effectively leaving a large part of the population of those countries without appropriate healthcare solutions. This is what we are trying to tackle with the Ercilia Open Source Initiative, focusing on reducing the imbalance in scientific production between low and lower middle income countries and high income countries. We focus our mission on three main pillars. The first one is open source. Everything we do is shared real time in the open via GitHub. All our assets are free. They are associated to permissive license, meaning they can be used for academia, but also for commercial purposes. They do not have associated patents. And we hope this benefits the reproducibility of our experiments because it can be double checked by anyone in the world. Second, we favor in-country research. By this means that we avoid what is so-called as helicopter research, where researchers from more wealthy institutions come to local institutions in low and lower middle income countries and use them as data collectors. But the data analysis and the scientific authorship and the scientific direction do not come from these local institutions and they are simply mere field collaborators. So what we are trying to do is to partner with organizations in low and lower middle income countries where they retain the scientific leadership and we simply support their projects. And we also try to implement our assets in situ with our partners in their local institutions. And third, related to this, we try to build sustainable collaborations by including in all the scientific partnerships we develop capacity building activities. We train and we work hand in hand with local scientists to improve the knowledge sharing on the artificial intelligence and machine learning area. And we also adapt our assets for low resources, meaning that we try to make models that are light enough so that they can run in any computer without the need of high super computer requirements. Before we continue, let me give a brief summary of Ercilia, our name, because we think it quite good represents our mission and what we are trying to do. So Ercilia is one of the cities imagined by Italo Calvino in this very beautiful book, The Invisible Cities. And what the inhabitants of Ercilia do is every time they establish a new relation, they throw a thread from their home to the home of this person, and it can be a commercial, a friendship relation, etc. And once the city has so many threads that you cannot pass through, what they do is they go away and they start building the city somewhere else and just leave the network of connection they formed as a backbone of the old Ercilia city. So we think these networks represent quite well what our mission of connecting scientists in the world and also the use of the neural networks that we do for our models. After this introduction, let's go more into detail into what we are actually doing. So we've started by focusing on open source drug discovery, because artificial intelligence and machine learning has the potential to screen larger number of molecules and reduce the time to drug discovery, potentially reducing the total cost of the drug discovery pipeline, which is essentially in the case of neglected diseases, such as the majority of infectious diseases, because less than 10% of the drugs currently in development are focused on this disease area, which leaves a large number of people without adequate healthcare or medication options. So artificial intelligence is great, but of course there are some drawbacks to its application, mainly being that most of the papers do not yet share the entirety of the code, even in the academic context. There is unclear benchmarks and lack of experimental validation, so basically these models are seen as black boxes without interpretability, and experimental wet lab data scientists do not really trust them. And finally, because most of them are deployed within a highly technological context, they are very difficult to use by anyone who is not an expert on data science, and this leaves the majority of the potential users, namely wet lab scientists, without access to these new technologies. And this difference is even larger in countries where the data science skills are scarce and yet to be properly developed along with infrastructure. So before we continue, let me give a brief overview of the drug discovery pipeline for those of you who are not familiar with it. So basically, the drug discovery pipeline can take up to 10 to 15 years and cost even $2 billion, so it's a very long and expensive process, and it can be aided virtually at any stage by artificial intelligence methods. So for example, by prioritizing which genes to study, by improving the chemical leads that will putatively be new molecules, by improving clinical trial design and enrollment of patients, or even in the post-approval phase by surveilling the adverse effects that may appear once the drug is widely administered to the whole population. So as you can see, artificial intelligence really has the potential to optimize all this pipeline and speed it up and decrease the total cost. And this is essential in this field of infectious diseases where most of the health needs are still unmet. In practical terms, let me give an example of what we actually do. So for example, an ideal situation is we have a collaborator that has a drug screening cascade where he or she has a number of molecules that are tested experimentally, for example, in this in vitro setting of antibiotic activity. So here you can see whether the bacteria is growing or if it's not growing. If it's not growing, it means that the compound is an putative active antibiotic, whereas if it's growing, it means that it's not a good antibiotic. So we have this data, which is a collection of compounds with its activity against a specific pathogen. Then we take these chemical structures and we featurize them. By featurizing them, we mean that we capture their physicochemical properties in vectors in a format that the computer can understand and that is amenable for machine learning. So once this chemical information is transformed into a vector, it can be fed into a machine learning model, into any type of machine learning model. And then once this network is trained, we have the final model where a scientist, a wet lab experimentalist, may come with a new suggestion or with a new library to screen. And before doing the actual experiments, he or she can understand whether a molecule has the potential of being or not an a new antibiotic. This means that we can reduce the number of molecules that are screened and save a lot of time and effort in that direction. So our goal is to produce ready-to-use machine learning models. Our focus is to bundle all these models, so all the process that goes inside getting the data, processing it, training the models, validating the models, and hopefully validating them even experimentally if we can, adding to these all these layers that are currently happening in different research groups in academia, bundle all of them with this deployment layer, which means that a scientist can now come with a question and use a certain model without the need to understand what is going in inside here, and without the need to be actually a data science expert, because most of the wet lab scientists are not and won't be. So now they can come with, for example, a drug of interest and get a prediction of what is the target of this drug. These models we are collecting in what we call the Dersilia Model Hub, and the Dersilia Model Hub has different types of models. First, we collect models from the literature, meaning open source models that have been developed by third-party authors. Here, as an example, you have this very cool paper from Stokes, published in Cell last year, where 2 years ago now, where they developed a machine learning method to predict whether a new molecule will be an antibiotic or not. So we've taken this model, we've bundled it, and now a researcher can come with, for example, a new drug and obtain a prediction whether it's active or inactive. Then we also train our own models, first with data from the literature. So, for example, in this case, this is an open source large screening campaign against the malaria parasite. So we take this data set that was generated in this publication, and we use it to train a model so that basically this data can now be reused and put in a format of a model. And then a researcher can come and obtain a prediction of whether a compound is going to be an active or an active antimalarial according to this large screening data. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, what we also do is we partner with researchers from low and middle income countries, and what we do is we use their data to train specific models to answer their problems. So basically they come with a question and we try to support their look for an answer with our technology. And what we are doing to speed up the number of collaborations we can engage with is we have developed what we call the ZyraChem, which is an automated machine learning pipeline specifically focused on chemistry, and this allows us to engage in more collaborations and in a faster way. Of course, all the data that we gather and all the models that are from third-party authors are appropriately referenced in our hub. And the hub looks something like this. So we have this collection of models that scientists can browse through. They can select the ones that are relevant to their research and then obtain their predictions. And we reached almost 100 models in this last year. And before we continue, let me give a brief overview of the science behind the hub. So this is a representation of the different types of biological entities related to diseases that we have and the relations between them. So for example, now we have started by trying to model the compound interaction with genes, so whether a compound may downregulate or upregulate a gene and how this will affect a particular disease. But there are other kinds of relations that are also relevant for diseases and that are also important. So this is the blueprint of the type of models that we are trying to collect. So we aim to cover all these different edges here, all these different types of interaction. And before I finish, let me give a quick overview of the technology that is behind the Dersilia Model Hub, the Chemical Checker. The Chemical Checker is a resource to generate bioactivity signatures for small molecules, meaning vectors that encode not only the chemical information, but also other types of biological information that we may have about a specific molecule. And it's been developed in the context of cancer and Alzheimer, but our chief scientific officer, Miquel Duran, during his postdoctoral research at the IRB Barcelona. And now we are currently working to adapt this technology to the field of infectious diseases. So how the chemical checker works is we usually have these classical chemical fingerprints, as I was mentioning before. So if we have a specific molecule, we try to represent in a vectorial format each one of its particular chemical characteristics. Yeah, so we put those in a vector, and we use this vector to train a machine learning model. But now, thanks to the chemical checker, what we can do is we can take other types of information aside from their structure, but also their mode of action. If we even know which targets, which genes or which proteins is it binding to, and also if we have information about its secondary effects or its application in clinical trials, etc., etc. So we can now gather all these different kinds of information into a vector. These vectors are very enriched molecular representations that can be used to train more informative models. In summary, the chemical checker organizes all these data types in 25 blocks that relate to chemistry, the targets of these drugs, the networks these drugs may be in the cell that this drug may be interacting with, its effect on cells, and finally, if there is, its clinical information. So currently this is now representing around 1 million molecules, and it has been trained using Siamese neural networks. As a representation of what does it mean, so here you have different disease indications, and each line here would be one of these vectors. The classical solution uses chemistry information, so this is how we would represent a molecule to train a machine learning model afterwards by using the classical chemistry-based solutions. But now, thanks to the chemical checker, what we can do is we have these vectors that represent all these different levels of information, and we can see how indeed drugs that are for similar indications, they cluster together also in these other different types of information, not only on the chemistry side. So this is giving us a very powerful, a very enriched overview of the chemical landscape, and hopefully allowing us to produce more accurate models that help advance the drug discovery field. And before I finish, I'd like to give an overview of the projects that we are currently involved in. So we are developing a virtual drug screening pipeline together with the H3D Drug Discovery Center in Cape Town, meaning that we are trying to mimic their relevant experimental assays in the computer to help them prioritize molecules and reduce the number of experiments they have to do and the attrition rate. Then we are also starting a collaboration in the context of African Natural Products as a source of new antiviral agents for COVID and HIV. We've also worked in the linking of clinical records to help identify patients and improve the healthcare of HIV positive patients with maybe cervical cancer. And we've also worked on the elucidation of the underlying causes of death of children using minimally invasive autopsies in Mozambique. And we've also collaborated with the Open Source Malaria Consortium in what they are trying to develop new patent-free drugs for malaria. And we're also interested in improving the knowledge on pharmacogenomics in African populations to produce dosages for anti-malarial and anti-tuberculosis drugs that are more adapted to the specific genetic traits of these populations. So the take-home messages of my presentation is we are a non-profit organization. We work towards democratizing the access to machine learning tools for biomedical research. We work internationally with a network of collaborators that are mostly based in Southern Africa. We combine remote working and then also on-site collaborations to deploy our assets and work hand-in-hand with the local scientists. All the assets we are developing are open source, because we are working at the intersection between the academia, startups, and larger pharmaceutical companies. And we, of course, welcome any contributor, collaborator, partnerships. So we would really like to hear from all of you. And that's it. Thank you very much for being here. And I'll be happy to answer any questions, or you can contact me on this website. Thank you so much.